Hello there, and welcome to another episode of the London Theatre Podcast. I'm your host, Tom Hartwell, back live in the studio, in my bedroom, of course, coming to you live in lockdown for what is week 733. Who keeps count anymore? I certainly haven't. But the sun is shining. We've got some lovely people here to talk to us today from the Flying Seagull Project. From a rooftop, no doubt, we have, three actors with us, and we have the CEO of the charity, Ash Perrin. And welcome. And we've got Sarita Plowman here. We've also got Eddie and Regina. We've got some sound stuff going on, so there might be a little bit of up and down, but just bear with us throughout this lockdown podcast. We're making it work, aren't we, guys? It's going well. First of all, before we jump into the Seagull Project and what you guys have got coming up for us, should we just do a quick round just to check in with each of you? Because obviously it's a strange time, especially for the arts and the business that we're all working in. So Ash, should we start with you as the CEO of the charity? How have you been? How's your lockdown been so far?
We're not supposed to swear, are we? So I'll keep it. I'm joking. No, like everybody, you know what? I think those of us who are in the fortunate enough position to be able to be at least mildly objective, there are definitely things that we can all identify that have been valuable or positive. Not just we've cleaned our warehouse and fixed the costume, not just that, but even being able to objectively say the thing I miss the most is, or the thing that makes me the happiest is. And it might be that I'm unhappy because I'm not doing it, but like now we've always loved giving live performances, but I don't think I was so fully aware that it's the what I receive by having that exchange. I think I always thought it was more that we did a thing that they joined in with, but actually it's entirely reciprocal. And I think that's what I can't wait to get back to, is when we, you know, when we can really, really kind of celebrate what we used to think was the mundane or the ordinary, which we actually realize is an exceptional blessing, is that we can mix with people and make loads of people laugh, and they can make us feel buzzy and alive as performers feel when they're on stage or whatever. So yeah, it has been moments of rubbish like everyone else, moments of huge doubt, but some lovely, because I'm so comfortable living in a truck in a field with food in my belly and no real risk, you know, it's like, I consider it a blessing in disguise.
That's a really interesting way of putting it, because, yeah, you're right. I think it's sort of taught us to sort of take stock of what really matters. And just the amount of, I'm looking forward to seeing all of the work that comes out of this, and just, you know, that first show when you're back, you know, and you've got an audience and just everyone's vibing it and just loving it. It's certainly taught.
Well, I think even in the humanitarian world, and I know, you know, we'll get on to the other guys in a second, I'll stop chatting on. But even in the humanitarian world, you wouldn't believe it, and I never would have thought it, but eventually it becomes day to day. It's like, oh, here we go, off to a camp. You forget, the terrible situations that the refugees are in the camps we're working in. But you also, it just becomes work. I sometimes even say, like, oh, I've got work tomorrow. Mm. But my work is go with a show into a place where children have limited lifespan, or into the prisons where Sarita ran an amazing project, or with the teens down in Hastings. You know, it's like our work isn't work. It's not like we're forced. Actually, it's far more valuable than that. But also it's like it's far more essential. And I think that's, these guys will probably echo it too, but for us as an organization, the hardest thing is knowing how desperately hard and bleak many people's lockdown have been, to a level we can't even imagine, and not being able to do anything to alleviate that suffering. That's a very disempowering feeling for an organization that's normally right in the midst of it. So
of course, yeah, it's, I mean, yeah, I bet you can't wait to get back to work, and I bet they can't either. Yikes. Well, sooner rather than later, I'm sure. Let's throw it to the actors on this glamorous rooftop of theirs to find out how they're doing. Sarita, we'll start with you, shall we? If you could just put your martini down for a second. And it's a lovely space. I was just saying before we started recording, you know, I'm usually used to seeing people, you know, in their bedrooms, or, you know, there's usually, they put a bookcase behind them or something, like in the news. But you've got a roof. Where are you guys at the moment? Whereabouts in London are you?
We're in Soho, in the heart of Soho.
Oh my God.
Which has become our new rehearsal space. And we are we're just so lucky to be able to mark out the dimensions of a stage and try and figure out how to create a show that is safe and socially distanced. We're in like a massively fortunate position to be able to do that. I'm so grateful.
Yeah, it looks gorgeous wherever it is. And just to sort of contrast that, Ash, where are you at the moment?
I'm in the warehouse. We just had to move all our stuff out the office in London, so I am surrounded by piles of junk that little by little. Yeah, I'm in a very unglamorous warehouse near Stansted. So.
Brilliant. Just to give our listeners an idea of the we got
alone, bouncing around like the last Malteser in the box, just alone in a warehouse full of junk.
There's a good visual metaphor there for our listeners, so you can now picture where we are. It's a tale of two cities here. So, Sarita, how are you doing? How has your lockdown been?
Lockdown, again, I guess I'm in a very fortunate position that I've massively disrupted, like on a serious level by this pandemic. And I was able to stay at home, do some DIY, catch up on jobs that I just never seemed to get done at home, which was, that was great. I think I got to a point a few weeks ago where that longing to be creative, to have that human interaction, to create that live experience, that kind of started to overwhelm me a little bit. And that's when we had a little chat and we said, look, should we just create something? We can still create. Make sure that we're safe and socially distanced and still be creating things with each other. And I think that's actually kind of been my saving grace over the last couple of weeks, because yeah, I did get to a point where I missed that immensely.
And coming back
is a massive part of my life, you know.
Of course. And coming back to the rehearsals, into that rehearsal mindset, and just sort of getting back to work, how did that first day feel for you guys? Did you remember how to do it? Did you remember how to create and perform? It must have felt strange.
Oh yeah. I mean, the thing is with people who create theatre, people who tell stories, it's not a choice that we're making. It's not a decision we made when we were young. Oh, I'm going to go into this industry or that industry. We are who we are. We are storytellers. Stories connect us, they keep us sane, they keep us human, they do so many things, and we don't have a choice. We would never forget it. You know what I mean? It's not something that we would ever kind of go, oh yeah, how do I do my job again? Because this isn't a job, it's an intrinsic part of who we are, and we can't help it.
Yeah.
So actually, it was kind of like coming home. It was an outpouring of 3 months of stories that needed to be told that had only had a kind of online output. It was a beautiful homecoming to this rooftop in Soho.
I mean, yeah, what a homecoming as well. I mean, Sarita, obviously I have the pleasure of knowing you before this podcast, and obviously I know you have kids, and what's it been like for them, and like the challenge. You know, I'm sure because you, the Seagull Project works so much with children. I mean, what's your experience been, sort of trying to keep that world going at the same time as your own?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm quite fortunate in that my children are a bit older. So my son's been having the time of his life and has hardly been affected by anything really, because they managed down quite low over there, so he's kind of carried on as normal. My 16-year-old in this country started off being so happy that she did exams, and that kind of held her through a good few weeks of the first few weeks of lockdown, and then slowly started to realise that she really, her reality as a 16-year-old is being stuck in the house with me as her only company, which I don't think is any teenager's dream. We've managed to have a great time despite it, but the last few weeks I've been concerned about her social life. You know, it's important that she continues to have a social life, and teenagers are not great at arranging things and not great at keeping to plans. So I guess I've had to facilitate that a little bit and make sure that she's continuing to socialize. But I have to say, anyone who's listening to this who has young children, I doff my cap to you, because I honestly do not know how I would have done this with young children, and having to deal with schooling them and making sure they weren't overly anxious, and, you know, kind of talking to them about the importance of social, I hate the word social distancing, just kind of physical, the importance of physical distancing without scaring a young child. I don't, like, I'm so glad that I didn't have to do that. And to any parents listening, well done. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I don't know how I would have managed with young school age children.
Well, what's great is this spectacular that you're creating at the moment is almost a way to say thank you, right? Because this is sort of it's being engineered as a end of term celebration performance, right? That you're sort of bringing a bookend at least to this sort of strange term, which we'll talk. Let's talk about that in a sec. I just want to hear from the other two actors on this glamorous Soho balcony here. Regina, Eddie, someone want to jump in? How's lockdown been for you?
I think just like Sarita and Ash was saying, in many ways I've been very, very fortunate as well in lockdown. I was able to continue working because as well as being an actress, my artistic side belt, I'm also a tutor. So this day and age, when suddenly the parents found themselves locked in with their children at home, they were like, great, remember Spanish? Remember they were learning Spanish? Let's do it again, four times a week.
Four times a week, wow. It's a lot of Spanish. Yeah. Wow, yikes.
Well, I do a really good job.
Yes, good for you. Yeah, business is booming.
It's a new generation. They're going to be bilingual, full on.
Yeah.
That was really good, really fortunate. And as well, I live a very manic life, all over the place, a million and one jobs, and never in one place for too long. So suddenly having the time to stay still and to read and to meditate and to talk with my partner things that we need to talk and process things that have happened and have been going on for quite a while, digest them, understand them, that was suddenly, it felt like pure liquid gold. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
And so in many ways I'm really lucky as well, because I wasn't personally by coronavirus. The other people that I know, they've been safe and taken care of. So again, I haven't been suffering the consequences of that. So I was able to dive into my emotional turmoil, which is, you know, storm. Mm. But
yeah,
beautiful. And I am feeling a lot like a different person. You know, Regina before the lockdown and Regina after the lockdown. Things are a bit more clearer, a bit quieter. And I know things of myself that I'm thankful that I had the chance to get to know. Yeah. And now it makes my job of being a creator way much better, like even more fun.
Yeah, it's sort of like how Ash was saying, you sort of appreciate more of what you got out of it, not just the act of performing to entertain, that was fulfilling something within yourself as well. And, you know, if there's any positives to come out of this whole thing, is that we all go back to work really appreciating the fact, you know, of what that did for us. So that's great. Great to hear. Good on you, Regina. Great. And Eddie, do you want to jump in? Let us know how you're doing.
Yeah, no, I'm doing well. I suppose similar sort of experiences with some of the other guys. It's I was in a show drawing just as the lockdown came in, so my show got cancelled. So that was a bit of a sort of adjustment. So it was there's been sugar moments, I'm not gonna swear, and there's been really good moments as well. I think it's just finding that balance and finding what you can do. So I ended up doing a lot of DIY. Luckily, I've still got a roof over my head. I'm all anyway. You guys are laughing at the back, because that's all I talk about whenever I'm on downtime.
Your DIY. Well, Sarita said she's doing DIY as well. So, I mean, between the two of you, you could build like a new theatre space or something.
Around the corner, so she knocks on my door. I leave the tool by the door, and then And then 2 days later, it's back on the doorstep.
Very organised.
But it's, yeah, it's a weird one because it's as came in, I instantly lost 5 months' worth of work as well. So it's a bit eerie in that sort of aspect. So it's finding things to pass the time. And then luckily, we all sort of got together and decided to bring back the spectacular. And it doesn't talk about Corona, but I think there's relevant moments in the show that the kids can hopefully relate with and kids about sort of getting over your fears and being brave and adjusting to a new world and things like that. So I think those are real sort of key moments. I think that's exciting for us to be able to hopefully bring that into sort of classrooms and bedrooms and living rooms of kids, hopefully around the world, not just the country.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be nice. It was an interesting one the first time we got together because you're constantly aware of social distancing and not sort of getting close to each other. And we've stuck like very strictly. But yeah, it's a weird way of rehearsing. It's a different way of approaching it. Rather than being like, you're always wanting to find the moments where you can be together on the stage, we're finding the moments where we can be distanced.
Yeah.
So it'd be interesting how we change the scope of the show. That should be, yeah, really fun.
It sounds fascinating how it's all going to come together, but also appreciating, like Sarita was saying with kids, is how parents have been able to sort of communicate what is actually happening in the world right now. It's almost, I mean, as adults, I feel like I find it hard to comprehend everything that's happening right now. I mean, and trying to break that down for a kid, I mean, probably one of the challenges of the piece. And we'll come on to the actual project, the spectacular, sorry, in a sec. I just wanted to introduce our listeners a little bit more to the Flying Seagulls project and what it's all about. Because Ash, you touched on it briefly about what it was you got up to before lockdown. But I checked out your website and just sort of saw some of the work you've done, and it's all over the world that you've been going and you know, bringing this work to families and kids all over the world. So do you just want to talk to our listeners a little bit about how this got started and what it's all about?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we've been running now for, this will be our 13th year. So it was founded in 2007. We started off, I mean, basically it came from a moment when I realized, the truth was I used to earn really good money as a top end entertainer. I used to work for 3 months a year and then travel the world the other lump, having a great time, doing deep stuff that when you're 21 you do, reading Buddhist books, sitting in groups of other English kids, meditating in Cambodia, like all the cliches. And it's lovely fun and it's a real rite of passage if you're lucky enough, you know, to be lucky or reckless enough to be in that. But anyway, I was in Cambodia and I just was doing the things that you do. And one of the things you do, and I'm just being candid and honest here, is you go to an orphanage and it makes you feel good. And you go home and you tell your friends, I went to an orphanage. And that's a very travel-y, normal thing. And I was in this Cambodian orphanage and I had a rubbish little guitar, which I'm quite rubbish on, and I strummed a few chords. And just watching the impact on their, like, even in their faces, like their eyes widened, and then they gathered like moths to a lamp, you know. And I was literally just G, D, A minor, you know, No Woman, No Cry, Knocking on Heaven's Door, and about 500 other songs. And they just gathered and gathered. And it was like, I kind of witnessed, I suppose, what had always given me absolute joy and confidence, which is the freedom and beauty of someone caring for you by sharing creativity or play with you, let's call it. And I was born deaf, so I got my hearing when I was 2.5. And it was only through music and through my mum's devotion to kind of musical rehabilitation that I just not only caught up, but now make my living out of that. So it's like, I know firsthand how powerful and how healing and how empowering it can be. To then see what it looks like when it's missing in a kid's life, which it was in Cambodia. And we left the next day and I was thinking about them and I was thinking, like, it's no one's job to give them a hug if they cry. And I know that sounds wet, but like, we weren't very wealthy growing up, but my mum, you know, we just had a solid family and we stuck out for each other, and you know, nothing better than a hug from your mum. And my mum's a great hugger. So it was like that thought that when they feel scared and they have a nightmare, or if they get overwhelmed by what happens when you, even when you just leave school, or when something, you know, I had my mum to ask and say, I'm going to miss my friends, or I'm scared because I don't. What if no one's job is to love you, or no one's job is to check if your heart's feeling okay? And that was overwhelming. And I cried my eyes out in this taxi after this this orphanage, flew straight back to England, sold everything that I could sell, bought a van, and we drove to Romania 3 months later and started touring orphanages and kids' homes. For that reason, I wanted them to know the magic of someone really giving, I was going to say a swear word then, but someone really caring about you, caring about what you feel like. Are you happy? Aren't you happy?
Yeah.
Are you confident? Aren't you confident? Like, food and shelter, sure, but like, you know. So anyway, so that was 12 years ago. And then since then, we've meandered through lots and lots of work in Roma communities and special education in Romania. We've worked in 4 continents. We worked in Ghana. We worked in India. And then most recently, obviously, with the humanitarian refugee disaster. I won't call it the refugee crisis. I'll call it a humanitarian disaster surrounding refugees, which is what it's become. It was just impossible to be a European children's group and not wonder, can we be useful there? And that was 4 or 5 years ago. We did our first project within those camps. And again, like, it is a tragedy on numerous levels and in numerous ways. But because of the work we do and what we're skilled at, that is a tragedy of childhood. You know, these guys, these kids have seen things that you and I would turn a film off if it was in the film. It'd be too much to watch on television. And the sensations and the trauma and the turmoil. And I'm telling you, like, it's mind-blowing. I won't even go into it to dampen the mood. But anyway, what we see by real engagement, that same power that helped me rehabilitate, that same power that everybody on this podcast has felt at some point, including yourself, that same freedom and validation that you are all included in creativity. There is no such thing as not good enough as you're you. That's it. And when you tell the kids that through play and song and music, and you see them remember that they can like stuff, or they can feel hope, or they can imagine themselves as something special, then that's the point. So yeah, you know, we're now 5 years into that crisis response. In the last few years, Sarita's developed loads of stuff in the UK. Same concept, kids who aren't allowed in school. What's the overriding sensation? Not feeling valuable and not feeling like you're worth anything. How can you have hope if you don't believe you're worth anything? So if you're kicked out of school, you've been told by so many people you're not valuable. I'm sorry, but like, I am going to swear just once, but that is bullshit, and we mustn't ever stand for that. We mustn't allow children of any age or people of any age to be told they're not worth something because they've got obstacles that have, you know, transformed into peculiar character traits or difficult conflicts with the mainstream. We've got to support them and facilitate their return to a confident state. So that's what we do. We believe in magic. We believe in music. We believe in love and laughter. And I want everyone that we come in contact, I want to look them in the eye and for them to know that we love them simply because they're alive and they're them. And yeah, that's the project.
Wow. That's the mission statement in a nutshell. Amazing. Ash, where were you when I needed you in like the beginning weeks of lockdown with that speech, man? That just fueled me up. I was like, yeah, let's go and make some stuff. Let's go and...
You know what? It's all on the internet. Go to Sunshine TV. It was a load. When I first got back, I was manic, and I made about 30 videos of just madness to get people excited. Check it out. You'll find a few in there. I recommend the 1 minute of madness. It'll help.
I will link that in the podcast description for listeners to go and check out. So Sunshine TV.
Yeah, you'll see it on our YouTube channel, Flying Seagulls. But awesome. They're just silly tidbits. Exactly that, just to say, you know.
Well, it's no wonder you guys have done the amazing work you have with that sort of ethos and attitude behind it. I think it's so inspirational, but also, like you were just saying, like that point about you not having hearing at first and then being able to hear, which must have been amazing. But then to go into these camps or wherever it is and start, you know, playing music or doing magic or putting on a show. And for some kids, that's their first experience of that. So it's the same. It must be the same sort of sensation of hearing for the first time.
Well, it is in terms of what it is, you have no way to communicate. Mm. So I had no way to communicate because I couldn't hear and I couldn't then replicate sound. So it's the same. Like if you are a Kurdish 7-year-old girl in one of the horrible camps, let's say Moria, where you are amongst tens and tens of thousands of very desperate, when do you... You know, when is your voice heard? How do you get through? If you are in Hastings and you've been kicked out of school, if you are, you know, in a orphanage in Romania, it's the same thing. It's you're starved of the ability to, like we just said, we've missed that interactive, that reciprocal communication. It's the same thing. Anything that starves you of that can have the same traumatic effect, which is one of, you know, real isolation. And isolation is a horrible sensation. Loneliness, you know, there's nothing worse, is there?
No. And I mean, yeah, thank God you guys are doing what you're doing, which I think brings us neatly onto the spectacular project that is currently being devised on this amazing Soho rooftop. Sarita, do you want to just let listeners know what they're in for with this? So it's going to be on the 15th of July at 2 p.m. Is this going to be live streamed? Is it going to be recorded beforehand? What's this? How is this going to work?
I think what we want to do is we're going into Apple Car Arts Theatre, and the show will be performed live, and it will be streamed using broadcast quality cameras, and we've got multiple cameras as well. So it will be a live theatre show. And I guess what the vision is that we want as many children in the country or even all over the world to be tuning in at the same time for a shared experience, which, let's face it, that's what is special about theatre, is that it's a live shared experience between, you know, between the performers, and we want to have that shared experience with as many children as possible to mark for them the end of term. I think in situations like this, often those markers that children actually need, they get forgotten. I mean, my 16-year-old left school 2.5 months ago. She'll never go back to her school. She had a day's notice. She literally went in one day and then went in the next day for a leave. She'll never go back there. She won't be sitting in those classrooms again. And I just think markers for things like the end of term, and also the fact that stories and theatre connects us. You know, if I'm a child in primary school and I have classmates for, you know, the fact that maybe we might have like a Zoom chat with the teacher before the show and after the show, it will be a way of connecting classmates through this shared experience. And that's what we're hoping for. We're providing lots of resources to teachers for pre-show activities and post-show activities. So things like making a popcorn box and making a theatre ticket, maybe making a surround for whatever screen they're going to be watching it on to give them a real experience of theatre. Post-show activities, so things that tie in with the stories that they've heard in the show, and things to do with managing anxiety, thinking outside the box, dreaming beyond your circumstances. These are all themes that are in the show and that children need to be exploring right now, because we can, and we're hoping to prove that we can think and dream outside of our circumstances. You know, there's a lot in the media at the moment about, you know, theatre's kind of dead. and it's not. It's not, because actors, storytellers, theatre makers, we have always existed and will always exist, and theatre will always exist. We just need to think slightly outside the box at the moment, and let's show kids how to do that. And yeah, what we want is just this mass shared experience with children up and down the country, to bring people together, to give kids that sense of connection, and to celebrate the end of term and celebrate everything that they've kind of had to go through this term, all the changes and everything that they've achieved. So that's our hope. So we're hoping to get as many teachers, parents and schools on board to make this a mass shared experience.
Amazing. I think that's such a great idea. And the point you touched on, like it brings a sense of closure, especially for people who are leaving school and that's it.
Yeah.
You know, there's no closure there. You don't get to sort of, yeah, the sort of strange sort of finality of it all. But also, I think obviously a lot of kids have had Zoom lessons and that sort of thing, like maths and English and science. But there are like certain subjects, especially creative subjects like music and art and, you know, drama, are so difficult to do over Zoom. So I guess this is sort of a response to that, right? I mean, trying to teach arts over Zoom isn't, I mean, I've seen a few play readings, and let me tell you, it ain't the same thing. So,
yeah.
So just then, the process of creating this then, because you've obviously been rehearsing on this balcony, how have you how have you sort of engineered it? How has it worked? And sort of what are maybe people in for?
So the show already existed. We performed it last February in Streatham. And we gave away a huge amount of tickets to local organisations that were working with families who might not get to go to the theatre. So that in itself was a project that we did last year. And we created this amazing, magical show that that sold out. The daytime performances were all sold out. And we definitely, when we finished that run, we definitely knew we had to share it with more children and families because we had such a great response.
Requested it.
And people were requesting it as well. Yeah, we performed. People absolutely loved the show. It's very unique. It's not your typical kind of twee children's show, if you like. It's very unique, and it's enjoyed by adults as well, to be honest. So what we're doing on the rooftop is we're adapting and changing the blocking and around with new ideas with social distancing in mind. So we've got the dimensions of the stage, and we've each got a prop that makes sure that we're always away from each other. And when it comes to handling and sharing props, we're kind of finding new creative ways of passing things to each other, new ways of showing closeness but without actually getting close. And that's been quite exciting to figure out new ways of doing this, and a way that we can present connection and present unity without necessarily putting each other at risk. So that's kind of what we've been doing on the rooftop, is adapting a show that we already had, that we already wanted to share, but just kind of playing around with new ideas, really. And it's quite exciting.
I'm awesome. Martinis.
And Eddie says we've been drinking martinis as well. But don't tell anyone.
Hey, it's lockdown. No judgment here. I've been pouring vodka on my cornflakes most mornings. But that's awesome. I mean, can adults who don't have kids, who maybe, you know, I finished school a long time ago, but maybe, for example, I could still come along and watch. Can anyone just sort of buy a ticket and rock up?
Yeah, we've got, so for schools, we've got tickets for schools are £1 per child. If they use the discount code SCHOOL at the checkout. And if you're general admission, it's £3 a ticket. And if you're a school in Newham, which is the borough that the theatre we're live streaming from, Applecart Arts, if it's a school in Newham, the tickets are completely free of charge. So, you know, we just want as many people as possible. And yeah, absolutely, if you're an adult and you want to see what the fuss is all about, come and join us. It's a load of fun. It's very interactive as well. So we're kind of, what we're also playing around with on the roof is new ways of interacting with audiences kind of down a camera. So as well as your traditional sound and lighting cues on the script, we're all kind of camera cues. So we're each going to have to know exactly what camera we need to be looking down at a specific time.
Oh, wow.
Et cetera, et cetera. So we're kind of like playing around with that, really, and playing around with new ways of creating theatre with cameras in, you know, kind of like a new art form, really.
Yeah, that's quite an interesting skill set to have. I mean, and don't feel bad if it doesn't go exactly to plan, because how many times do you watch the news and they're staring down the wrong camera and you just think, you're staring down the wrong camera? So even you know, people that have been doing it that for years still miss it. So that sounds awesome. I can't wait. Let me just check the diary. I'm definitely free on July the 15th, so I will be there.
We have a bit of a saying in the Seagulls. We do it when we do our live shows, where we say that childhood isn't age specific, it's attitude specific. So if you want to come along to 11, like, we've been looking at getting in touch with you know, community centres where the elderly live, for example. It's nice traditional storytelling with some fun, clean songs and jokes. And, you know, I think sometimes people can get a bit carried away with thinking they have to watch something sophisticated, but Lauren and Hardy is still the biggest selling, and Charlie Chan is still the biggest selling shows in the world.
Yeah.
Because Tom and Jerry, I think, or Mr. Bean are the only ones at Topham. Mr. Bean is the biggest selling cultural offering the world has ever seen. So I think, yeah, the day that we can pretend we're something a bit more grown up is a fake one.
No, and I think, yeah, more now than ever, we need more of that kind of innocent sort of just an excuse to have fun and play. And I'll definitely be checking it out. And I think I just wanted to ask, because obviously this has become such a huge global endeavor, and obviously with restrictions at the moment with getting around places, and because I imagine a lot of the places you visited are still, you know, there's still kids there that need, you know, this same sort of thing. And obviously the world being the way it is at the moment, how do you, for the charity and for the Seagull Project, how do you envision when we're all back to work with this sort of fresh look at how we're going to do this? How do you envision getting to these places? And
I mean, we're basically like water. So if there is a crack anywhere, we'll find it and we'll make our way through it. It's never been, you know, imagine, like, we've never had an offer that was easy to explain or immediate to be accepted. So we've had to go into, like in Northern Greece, myself and Bendik, another big bearded Norwegian clown, we spent 2 hours in the General Brigadier, which is the highest ranking military officer in Northern Greece. We spent 2 hours with him and we ended up talking about clarinets and how good swings are in parks. But it took 2 hours and we were saying, you know how a swing is nice? It's that's nice, isn't it? And you know how like clarinets are nice? And like we just, you know, we've had to convince and find our way and keep that loving but constant firm pressure to get into everywhere. And we'll just do the same. You know, the kids in the camps, I'm going to say it now, it is an act of criminality on behalf of all of any of humanity that could have done more that we haven't. It is phenomenally bad, worse than ever before. So, yeah, I've got a flight booked and I plan to go back to Greece in the, probably actually just immediately after the show. So I've just changed my flight. So I want to be here for the spectacular. Mm. And then we're going to just see what's possible. We're going to get out and again, like just, you know, a bit like sunlight, you just, any crack there is, we'll make our way through. And we have to. And even if people say that this new norm, you know, the new norm, if it's not a complete review of all the ways we've become slightly callous and slightly closed-eyed to those in need, then I think we've wasted an opportunity for a new norm. I wrote it down actually just a minute ago when Sarita was talking about the show. And we were talking about the new world, and I think you said the phrase, the new world we're moving into. And I think something about this show, actually, by accident, or possibly by the fact that it's a sentiment we all feel, I think the new world, and the new norm has been here for a while. I think it's been here since the digital revolution began. And I think just now, in this stark contrast, where suddenly all human elements are withdrawn, we've suddenly gone, oh, actually, that's a good reminder that we don't necessarily want to go too far down the digital path so that we lose some of those, you know, more traditional, more human values. And the show's about that, you know, it follows all sorts of characters. And you know, one of the central ones that is left in the past, dated and unneeded and unwanted. And it's, at least the original version is, I actually haven't seen the new version, so I could be speaking wrong. But that's great. But the original one, you know, featured a lighthouse keeper, which is a traditional member of the community that stood on the cliffs with a light so that boats wouldn't crash. I mean, that is an act of community. It's an act of love. It's an act of bravery. And we can't lose that now we're all going online. We can't mistreat our staff because they're no longer in the office. We can't blag that we're doing more to our boss because he won't know. Like, it's all these things now we have to really, and I think this show sums it up, really connect with a sense of love and respect for everybody. And yeah, and that's what's going to happen in the camp. For the charity, it's been disastrous for our emotional state. The Arts Council, we are very lucky. They supported us with a grant, which has made a real difference. It means we'll carry on.
Amazing.
But it's a team, you know. I'll sum up. I know I'm jabbing on again, but we have an amazing team. You know, Sarita, Reg, and Eddie, who you see there. There's another seven or eight, you know, key players, and they're all so ridiculously determined and so energized towards supporting people through this show, in the flesh, in the schools, that you won't stop us. We're kind of punks. We're just punks with heart.
Punks with heart. I love it. I think that's a lovely place to sort of end up. I just before we go, I just to hear from the three punks on the Soho rooftop there. just to give us a little, just something that you hope people take away from this show, just to hear from each of you what it is, but also how Ash sort of said at the beginning of this, how it sort of taught us to appreciate what theatre does for us. So I guess, yeah, just something about what you want people to take away, but maybe something that you've kind of found in yourself as well. That's quite a wanky question, but I think it's okay to ask. So, Sarita, you're sat in the sweet spot, so off you go.
Oh my gosh, I can't even remember the question. It was so good. I'll do an answer.
You got this.
From the show, I hope people take away that they can dream outside of their circumstance, and that nothing should stand in the way of where their imagination and their dreams takes them. I think for me, that's the central message of the show. But obviously, everybody takes away a different thing from the show. And in terms of like theatre and what theatre brings, I think it is that it's just that visceral, live, human connection. And the ability to share and absorb stories is massively powerful and so important to all of humanity that I just, yeah, that is something that I'm compelled to continue doing regardless of whether I'm frying my face in the midday sun on a rooftop in Soho or not. I'll keep doing it.
That's lovely. Thanks, Sarita. Regina?
Over and out.
Over and out.
I think from the show, what I hope the audience will take from it is just, not be afraid, not be scared of being silly, and laugh at oneself and laugh at each other. And sometimes, you know, we do have ridiculous dreams, or we do have things that we think are impossible or just, you know, bizarre. And nothing is ridiculous. Nothing is weird. Just share it with one person and you might make that dream, you know, a reality, and might make, like, way better and way more fun than you would ever imagine. But it's definitely, as Sarita said, you know, that sharing, that human connection, the hopes and, you know, the hope that comes with dreaming, and just taking life a little bit gentler on yourself and on each other. Laugh about it, just laugh. And in terms of from myself, what experience I took from it, it was, you know, everyone has been saying, as Sarita mentioned earlier, that theater is done, or that the arts, you know, the artists are the more superfluous job, the one that we need the least. I disagree, because as Ash earlier mentioned as well, in moments of crisis, in moments of pain, in moments of despair, you know, a share laughter, a share experience, a story, a visual experience could just simply connect us and take that conflict away and makes us feel that we're all in this together, that we're all in the same page. So that's what worked for me.
Brilliant. Oh, great, Regina. That's lovely. Thank you so much. And last but not least, Ed, put the cocktail down. Let's hear from you.
just to make it clear, we haven't been drinking for a minute. So, yeah.
You're the only ones probably. Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, to me, I suppose thinking about the show, it's very closely related to what everyone else has answered, but it's connection and love. And how I sort of mention that is because it's going to be different over the next months, depending on how long things go on for, but it's that connection from my contact. I was like wearing my mask the other day in a supermarket. Normally you're sort of looking away from anyone, but you kind of forced to have to use your eyes and finding, I don't know, hopefully because it's via Zoom, the kids can connect in other ways. And also hopefully they can learn to sort of create art and theatre in other ways. So you can't go to a theatre, but you can still create theatre at home, or you can create art at home. And kids are going to be on their school holidays, so they might not be able to go and see live theatre, but they can hopefully create it in their bedroom, and it can give them that inspiration, hopefully, to do that. Love.
Lots of love.
Really.
Brilliant. Well, I appreciate you all taking some time out of rehearsals to chat with us, and Ash, thank you for joining us as well. It's been absolute education just to hear, and just really, I think, what we need right now as well. There will be links in the description to not only the where you can check the show out, but also the Flying Seagulls project. Find out more about the charity. You can donate, I think, as well from the website, right? If you want to, if you listen to this and you're like, hell yeah, I want to get behind these guys. We need this in the world, especially right now. You can donate there. The Apple Car Arts, that's right. That's the theatre where this is going to be.
Yeah, Apple Car Arts is the theatre.
Apple Car Arts. Yep. I will link that. And yeah, thank you so much for giving up a little bit of your afternoon to chat with us. It's been a pleasure.
Nice one. Thanks, Tom. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
You're welcome. See you on July 15th. Bye.
Yeah, see you then.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the London Theatre Podcast. All previous episodes are available on Spotify, iTunes and SoundCloud. You can go to our website, thelondontheatrepodcast.com, and you can email us, thelondontheatrepodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter at LTheatrePodcast, that's L for London. And yeah, share the podcast. Leave a review, why not? You can also find more information on the shows, artists, and topics discussed in the podcast description if you're looking for some handy links. But thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time. Take care.